You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe. It simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God. For all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope everything is well with you today. Today is Wednesday, hump day, got to get over the hump. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do, and I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it, but if it isn't, I know you'll get it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. Always persevering, always into the struggle. Don't relent. Don't procrastinate. Hey, that's who you are, and we love you for it. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for podcasts. Click on podcasts, and right away at the top will be African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. My program, this program, is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Monday from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Very good program last night, Doc. Outstanding. A lot of good information. And boy, I tell you, like you said, you're going to have another one of those programs. That's for sure. Another one of those topics. He was talking about the Negrocracy. That's what he was talking about. He's talking about all that ignorance that is very pervasive in our community and all those buffers and those brothers and sisters. Well, I shouldn't call them brothers and sisters, because basically what they are traitors. So Wednesday, Revive tonight from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. On Thursday, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Friday from 8 until. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's not me. It's Sister POC and her program, Revive, from 11 to 1 on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, once again, it's Time for an Awakening from 7 p.m. until right here. Also, from Monday through Friday, from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Valentine Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get the largest. It's the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. Is We Buy Black. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. But if you are in the Atlanta area and you're near the Greenbrier Mall, they have a kiosk. So you can pick up those products, the laundry detergents, the batteries, the toothbrushes, the toothpaste, the deodorants, all kind of the underwear, the nice boxers that they have there. I'm telling you. You know, tile sets for gifts and so forth. It's WeBuyBlack.com. Also, two brothers and sisters, go online. They're trying to pull monies together to create a supermarket We don't have a supermarket here in the Atlanta area that is owned by us. I know it's damn near, it's ridiculous, but it will be one day, believe me. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans with Brother Bomani Tayemba. You can contact Brother Bomani Tayemba, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Give him a call at 404-931-9429. 931-9429. He has upcoming trips this year, Senegal and Gambia, April 3rd through the 13th for $3,300. The Ghana Repatriation and Investment Tour, May 25th to June 5th, $3,700. South African Roots and Culture Tour, November 20th through the 30th for $3,700. And then once again, back to Ghana. Repatriation and Investment Tour, December 24th through January 5th, 2021, also for $3,700. And then, of course, he's starting back off at Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through the 12th, 2021, and that's $3,500. Easy payment plans, $400 deposit, you pay on it, contact brother. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see video of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani. 2007. youtube.com/Bomani 2007. Baba Rinoco, my good friend Rinoco, he was in town this past week and had a chance to talk with him and spend some time with him, listen to his presentation. He has a trip to Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th. Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th. Beautiful pictures. Go on his website, Dr. D.R. Rinoco, RUNOKO.com. And he has another trip after the Uganda and Rwanda tour, which is an annual tour to Kemet, October 22nd. To November 4th, and he's going to do it all. You're going to see everything. He's going to see everything. So contact Dr. Rinoco for the cost of those two trips. I think the Rwanda, Uganda, Rwanda is like 42. And I think this is 47. Let me say, I should be more precise. I just shouldn't just throw that out there like that. Yeah, no, see, it's 42. It's 4,200 per person. But of course, if you want a single room for yourself and another $865 for the round trip, okay. Habesha stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Habesha. Went to the Habesha dinner a few weeks ago. Outstanding in what they're doing in Ghana. The town that they're building. The Kashi, which stands for Dr. Kwaku Adore Sustainability Institute. So they're doing all kinds of good things. They're doing all kinds of great things. So go online to Habesha.org, HabeshaIncorporated.org, HabeshaInc.org. And check out what they're doing. They deserve to be supported. They're building a village. And in fact, they said online, you go there, you see some of the things that they're doing. And this village is supposed to be up and running by October of this year. And I hope that and pray that that happens October 20th of this year. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End here in Atlanta. And believe me, the Shrine of Black Madonna operating hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, Sunday from 1 to 3. They have a African Holocaust Museum, and they got everything else. They got furniture. They got clothing. They got the red and black and green shoes and the gas shoes, Kwanzaa kits. They got them all. But more importantly, they have books. They have books. And if they don't have the book that you are looking for, believe me, they'll get it for you. They also have a class every Saturday. Free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. And that's his brother Olatunji, who's an instructor of the class of Know Thyself, African history class, Know Thyself. But if you cannot make that, but you want that information, they also have a multimedia library, an African History Club multimedia library that is full. In fact, it is now seven terabytes of African enlightenment. So contact the shrine, contact Baba Olatunji, and to find out how you can obtain yours. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. If you are at the kiosk of We Buy Black, then you're right next to the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Sister Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. And I'm going to be talking with her, and I got a history program that I want to present. And she asked me would I do it there, and I'd be more than honored to do it at the Medu Bookstore. Because, of course, Medu means writings. The word after Medu is Netcher. Netcher means gods, the writing of the gods. The Medu Bookstore, open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 and Sunday from 12 to 6. Give them a call at 404-346-3263. The other bookstore we talk about is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. My good brother and good friend, Kazimde Ajamu, is the proprietor. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Black Dot. There is light in the Black Dot. They also have the red, black, and green shoes and the gas shoes and all kinds of other stuff they got for you. Believe me, they got it for you. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And that is Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Family economics, as we like to say. The meeting is October. The meeting is March 13th through the 15th. It's going to be the annual ULU, Us Lifting Us, Forward Together, Backward Never, is going to be March 13th through the 15th at the Interdenominational Theological Center here in Atlanta on the campus of Morris Brown University. And it's going to be an outstanding conference. Hope you can be there. I'm not sure if they're taping it. I'm not sure if it's going to be a live stream. It should be, but I'm not sure. I'll get that information for you as the date approaches. That's Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Please check out usliftingus.com. Become a member. Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti and Sister Yah have been doing an outstanding job of educating and training our warriors. Akaban Institute, make your check money order out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. I repeat, Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Also, too, if you want to donate through PayPal or Cash App, the dollar sign YAH, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and you can make a constant payment to help the work that they are doing to educate our young warriors. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Riria in Haiti. She is in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti in the rural area. And you know they probably don't get too much resources in those rural areas because they're trying to do what they can do in the cities in the southern portion. And so contact my good sister Sanjay. Excuse me, so my good sister Gabby at sanjay-haiti.org, sonjay-haiti.org. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. February 25th. We cannot wait a people who have been denied our reality. We cannot awaken the people who have denied our reality and attempted to destroy or neutralize the healthiness of our culture to provide solutions. We cannot look to these people to restore our way. Brother Kambong. At the end of the day, the work begins. After we have expended all of our energy surviving the madness, comes a second wind that enables us to smile at and hug each other in a genuine, unpretentious love, and again to begin to do the quiet, intense work of nation building. It is a glorious, fulfilling time when we attend lectures by our own, have our study groups, drum and dance, and attend community classes, sometimes face-to-face, sometimes online. It is when we direct our rites program, carefully listen to the wisdom of our most thoughtful elders, study our classics, write our troops, teach from the heart, go to the spiritual gatherings and watch and discuss the merits and lessons of our historical documentaries and Sankofa movies. It is a time spent celebrating births, spiritual joinings, and family, a time when families, complements, and individuals can receive counsel. We gather at day's end as individuals in collective meditation to correctly channel our righteous rage as families deliberating our mission statements, as communities reaffirming our desire to earn our ancestors' appreciation. It is our time. It is our time alone. Affirm. I fill my spare time purposefully with us. Affirm. I fill my spare time purposely with us. February 26th. The race needs workers, not leaders. Dr. Carter G. Woodson. Reafricanization is the process whereby we take what we are learning through the submersion and submission into the lessons of our story and begin to apply it to ourselves in an effort to change ourselves from what we have been forced to imitate and exaggerate into our true selves, our ancestors. It is a process fraught with difficulty and hardship because our menticide has an extensive root system and logically connects everything we formerly thought and believed to be absolutely true. The anti-African crusade coming from without and within to keep us de-Africanized assaults us from every angle and in virtually every thought to the point where it's sometimes overwhelming. But once we know we are African and once we recognize we are not European, nothing Eurasian brings us can stop us from being who we are. Re-Africanization is the process whereby as we rise into our African selves, we begin the conscious collective process of changing our environment to match our growing awareness of how an African world would and should feel in this time and in this place. As we rethink, we become. Re-Africanization is a personal transformation. We actually become our ancestors. And with time and elevation, a significant number of Africans into consciousness, it becomes a communal transformation. Affirm, I am a re-Africanized worker. Affirm, I am a re-Africanized worker. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought by Baba Baruti. Love it. I love it. Always, always want to say it. Before I come to my guest, I have an outstanding guest today, brothers and sisters. I want to, usually on Wednesday, I begin to read some of the stuff that I usually read that helps us understand who we are, where we are. And, what did I do? I'll be all right. I'll find it. This is a speech that Kwame Nkrumah gave. You know, Kwame Nkrumah came into one of the first brothers to help liberate one of our countries, one of our nations from Europeans, from the British. And boy, do I hate them. But let me focus here. He gave this speech in 1961. It was 1957 that Ghana gained its independence. But in 1961, there was a speech of freedom. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives and the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not as just another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power
whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear and envy and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. A few years later, he wrote, "If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffer heretofore." How prophetic and how prophetic. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of the European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect the European has had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from European thoughts so to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered view because we are Africans. And because the future that the European leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani. And I know for some of us that's hard for us to fathom because we have been trained to try our best to make Caucasians respect us and deal with our humanity. But nothing could be furthest from the truth. Brothers and sisters, welcome our guest. Our guest, of course, is Dr. Arturo Ben-Or. Dr. Arturo Ben-Or, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Let me just say these things about the good brother, a good Dr. Ben-Or, who lives in Ghana. He's a member of the Distinguished Order of Crown Brothers, a third-level governmental official of the appointed leadership of the African Hebrew Israelites, Jerusalem. He's professionally, he's the executive director. Is that Edenic World Health Resort? How do you pronounce that?
Edenic.
Yes, sir. Okay, Edenic.
Edenic.
Aha. Edenic World Health Resort, and that's in Cape Town. So that's over there by my good sister Amakus, huh? One Africa.
Yeah. We're in Cape Coast, just about 5 to 10 minutes away driving.
Right. Her. Right. Yes, yeah, because I've walked up the road from her and went to Mabel's Table a couple of times and the years. But yeah, Sister Amakus, good friend, and stayed at One Africa's. And you know what? Her husband, Nana Kofu, he was a firefighter in New York. So I'm a firefighter.
Yes,
yeah, I'm a firefighter out of Milwaukee, Transit. Okay, we had a good connection there. Yep. The founder of the Edenic World Restoration Foundation, a nonprofit charity group, which, of course, is planting and cultivating sound ecological and economic development that is sustainable. Founder of Edenic World Tourism, that's a West African travel and tourism company which specializes in historical health, business, and leisure tourism. So we're going to talk about all of this and, of course, the community that he comes from and all the things. I mean, he's certified holistic health consultant, therapist, massage, and all kind of good stuff. That is my good brother. He also has a daughter. She goes to Howard University. It's her third year at Howard.
Yes.
Outstanding.
She's actually just graduated last year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
outstanding. I know you're proud. What is she going to do?
She's doing business management. She's doing consulting right now.
Okay.
In Maryland. Yeah.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah.
So, let us get off into the conversation, because I know that you sent me some good information on things that you guys are doing in Africa, at the museum. Then you're also dealing with tourism, because I know this is the year of return. Well, last year was the year of return, but it's still ongoing because other countries have picked up the year of return. I know Nigeria's one. They're talking about, you know, and to me, all of Africa should do it because bottom line is that, as far as I'm concerned, Africa is our hope. Africa is our future. Africa is the direction that we need to go. And we need to liberate Africa. We need to get rid of all the despots, all the neocolonialists, all the invaders, all the traitors. We need to make Africa. That's why I read that piece by Kwame Nkrumah. We need one Africa, you know. There's no other way. And we must understand, regardless of whatever religious philosophy you may have, whatever that might be, the bottom line is we need to put Africa first. You know, Malcolm said, when I come to the table to deal with the issues that are affecting our people, you know, but if I espouse Islam, there might be some problems because somebody might be, you know, Black Hebrew Israelite, more science, Seventh Day Adventist, Jehovah Witness, Christian, and there's going to be issues because they don't treat us, they don't do to us because we're those theologies. They do those things that they do to us because we're African. And so we need to come together on that reality and figure out how can we as African people develop the continent, which needs serious, as you know, serious infrastructure, you know, development and building and so forth. And it's and it can be done. It can be done. And yet, you know, we got the Chinese, and I know you live in Ghana. I was in Ghana this past April, and I've been to Ghana many times. And in fact, I venture to say that's one of the things that is disappointing to me, because I was in Ghana, you know, first time, the very first time back in 96. And it seems to be that the development is no further along today than it was back in 96. You know, the roads, the systems, the water system, the sewage system, the electricity or energy. When I was there this past April, I had three blackouts, you know. So I'm saying is that, you know, we as African people, it is our duty as Africans in the diaspora, wherever you are, here in America, wherever we are, to help liberate Africa. But because of what Europeans have done to us, we don't make that connection, do we?
Right. True. Very true.
Yeah. And that's what we need to do. Tell me some of the things that you're doing, and particularly in recognizing our history and how important our history is to us.
Okay. Thank you, Baba Oshi. First, I always like to give all thanks, honor, and praises to our Creator God. You know, Yah, we call him in the Hebrew, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm a African Hebrew Israelite from the community that's in Dimona, Israel.
Okay.
And
right.
I was blessed. I'm sharing that because as you asked about some of the things that I'm doing in terms of sharing our history, I've been blessed to really coming to an awakening of my identity, a greater knowledge of myself through the African Hebrew Israelites of Jerusalem community out of Dimona, Israel. It was through that community that I began to see myself much clearer than I have ever before, as they began to give me a new perspective on our history that I was totally surprised to receive, which was the fact that a great and important portion of our history, a missing link, so to speak, was located right there in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at the Bible, we had began to look at the Bible from a historical perspective. And even though we don't say that the Bible is an infallible book that has not been, translated many times from many different languages, that hasn't borrowed from the essence of certain other great and important cultures and doctrines in the past. But it certainly has some real solid elements of history for us as a people that I was able to identify with.
Okay.
And through that, I became part of our community out of Dimona, Israel, through our Atlanta jurisdiction, here in Atlanta, Georgia. And through that, that's how I got involved in holistic health, alternative health. And through that experience, I was able to enroll into our Institutes of Higher Learning out of Jerusalem, the School of Prophets Institute of Jerusalem, and where I was able to study preventive health care and regenerative nutrition. And through that, I was able to move into helping to develop some of our international projects, particularly the one there in Cape Coast, Ghana, West Africa. And in my growth and development, where I was learning more and more through the community about our history and who we are as a people, because, you know, in my experience growing up as a child, I didn't get much about who we were beyond the shores of America in terms of what we were taught about ourselves coming over here on the slave ships. You know, we weren't taught much about where we came from before that. So we couldn't identify much. But through this experience, I began to learn a lot more. And so I was taught quite a bit about, you know, some of the ethnic traits that connected us back to the Bible in terms of heritage in West Africa through some of the West African ethnic groups like the Ashanti. In particular, we were learning quite a bit from books like the Hebrewisms of West Africa and Hebrewisms, Akanisms and Hebrewisms by Dr. Mensah in Ghana. So when I got the opportunity in 2009 through the opportunity to go and work on an international assignment on our project in Ghana from our anointed spiritual leader, Ben Ami, I jumped on the opportunity because I had wanted to return back to the continent for some time. And I wanted to go and begin to experience what it was like to be back on the continent and then begin to connect with our people there to learn a deeper sense of what I had began learning there in Atlanta. And especially connecting with some of the tribes like the Ashanti to see if what some of these writings were saying was really true about us having a connection back to ancient Egypt, having a connection back to ancient Kemet, Israel, ancient Akana, the land of Cana. And I was able to remain in Ghana for the last 10 years and conduct my research firsthand with some of the ethnic groups there, and have been able to really verify quite a bit of what I had learned prior to going. So now, the last 3 years, I've been blessed and sponsored by our jurisdiction here in Atlanta to come back out and share some of these things with our people, particularly the youth, those who are in high school, those junior high students, those who are in in college. I've been sharing during Black History Month at Atlanta AU Center, Clark Atlanta, over the last couple of years. I went down to FAMU and shared. But really, it's been a great opportunity for me to share that history and tie it into some great things that are happening prophetically in our lifetime right now, that are unfolding, that are directly tied into what's happening in Ghana in terms of this whole thing, the year of return. And now they've been so excited and uplifted by the response for the year of return last year that they want to now dedicate a whole decade to the diaspora and engaging the diaspora community abroad and welcoming us back so that we can come and help rebuild Africa as those children who were taken away. They want us to come back and help improve. They know that we have some of the skills and talents through our experiences here in the diaspora to bring home, to help make us whole again, strengthen us as a people, and help rebuild Africa. So these things are not just happening out of a vacuum. There's something that's causing quite a few things to happen in our generation and time that we need to be made aware of so we understand. See, there's a time that we as a people, Baba Oshi, that we would look at and we could see that nothing was working for us as a people. Nothing was going good for us for a period of time. And we can look through this whole experience of slavery, Jim Crow coming out of that, then through the civil rights era, the Black Revolution, and then up until today, I came out here in 2017, 2018, and we were still struggling with all of the police brutality, the, you know, racial profiling, Black Lives Matter. We know that there's been times that we've had to deal with all of this, and we asked ourselves, and our forefathers have asked ourselves, when are things going to change? Well, you can see things changing now, Baba Oshie, and I've been blessed to be able to come out these last few years, and I've been very excited about speaking to the unfoldment of events and tying our history in so that we can see what is happening in our time and the changes that are taking place that really speak to the fact that we're entering into a time that if we can really comprehend what is unfolding in our generation and be able to know what to do in our generation to move in alignment with the spirit of things that are unfolding, then it's time for us to be uplifted as a people, as a whole again. But it's very important that we understand the time as they're unfolding. And I do speak quite a bit about prophecy, because that's one of the things that I feel that we don't really dig into often, Baba Oshie, is prophecy. When we talk about the different spiritual backgrounds and beliefs that we have and how we tie them into history, prophecy, because part of my presentation that I've been doing is called History and Destiny. You know, we were talking about the seeds of our future are buried deep in our past, where history meets destiny. And a lot of people don't understand that connection. You know, the Creator, the Most High, however we want to refer to Him, has chosen many ways to reveal Himself to us as people. And a couple of the ways that He has really done that is through our history and through prominent individuals who has used to reveal Himself through. And that's what's happening today. And I certainly like to talk about prophecy because it sheds light on the fact that there is a greater force, a greater power actively moving in our day and time. His signature is on those events that are taking place. You can link them up and you can see through a clear picture what is happening. And then it gives us the opportunity then to take hold to the movement of that great spirit in our lifetime.
Well, I'm hoping that we'll have that kind of clarity, but more importantly, I'm hoping we're reaching that destination. As far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm a nationalist, I'm a culture, I'm a Pan-Africanist. My mantra is Pan-Africanism or perish. That's what Dr. John Henry Clark told us. And then the other one is unify or die. Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die, regardless of what religion that you practice. You know, I have good friends who are Muslim, good friends who are Black Hebrew Israelites, good friends who are Seventh-day Adventists, Christians, and so forth. You know, and they're good people, and I respect them, and they respect me, you know. But I think one of the main problems for us, one of the main impediments to our unifying is the theologies that we believe, because we put our energy and all our purpose into the theology, not understanding, you know, that we need to come together as an African people, regardless of the theologies that we have, you know, because number one is that because of all these denominations, all these various types of theologies, ain't everybody going to believe your way. And so what needs to happen, I respect your religion, I respect your practice of it, but hopefully you respect the fact that we are an African people and we need to move in a direction that unifies and liberates and creates sovereignty for African people. For you to practice your religion, for you to live independently and so forth in an environment that is ours. I've always been curious about Damona Israel. I remember when the brothers and sisters had the play Sound and the Kidnapped Africans going around the country. Does that still in, do they still do that production that you know of?
It hasn't been put on lately in recent years. But there have been some talks about doing it again.
And they should.
Yeah,
they should. It's a beautiful production.
But, you know, you're in Israel. And Israel, as far as I'm concerned, was taken by Palestinians, by European Jews. The Jews that are saying they're Jews are not Jews. These are late converts to Judaism who dominate and control Judaism, who are very racist, who are very materialistic. I mean, they control. They control a lot. They control this system here. They dictate to this government what's going to happen. You know, so these European Jews who are there, how are the brothers and sisters? I know how some of the Ethiopian Jews have been treated in Israel, and some of the Africans, particularly Eritreans, who are treated, who in fact they've been saying, you got some time to get out of the country, and we'll give you some money to get out of the country, but if you don't, we're going to imprison you. You know. So how is Dimona able to sustain itself in that environment?
And that's a perfect question, Bob, and it leads right into what I want to what I was saying just a minute ago. How is it that we, those of the African Hebrew Israelites of Jerusalem out of Dimona, maintain ourselves over there amidst all of the, you know, the opposition that you see our people receiving, as you just mentioned? There has to be some kind of formula that we're applying that allows us to be able to stay over there against all the opposition that we faced since 1971, when the initial move by the Israeli government to actually deny us status, deny us access to certain of the things that we would be given in terms of being able to apply for status, health care, that kind of thing, to be able to stay in the land. 1971, they began to change the law of return specifically to address the issue of us returning from America in numbers. And from that time, we've faced, you know, quite a bit of opposition. There have been periods of time where members of our community have been prosecuted and have been deported on several occasions. And so it's been a real struggle and ordeal for our people to maintain there, but we've been able to do it. Mm-hmm. But the way we've been able to do it is through the application of a particular formula that has allowed us to be successful to this point, because we initially went into the land just a few months after the former doctor, minister, Martin Luther King Jr., gave his last speech in Memphis, where we refer to it as the mountaintop speech. And in that speech, if you recall, our listeners will recall, that's when Dr. Martin Luther King, on April the 3rd, 1968, he had spoken, said that, you know, he could see that we as a people would get to the promised land. He said that he might not get there with us, but he wasn't worried about that. He knew that we as a people would get to the promised land. Well, it wasn't just much more than a month after that that those of us who were in Liberia, West Africa, entered into the promised land. And we've been able to be there since 1969 in terms of the whole group that was in Liberia. Initially, there was 350 that left in 1967 from America going into Liberia, intent on making it to Israel. We stayed in Liberia for 2.5 years. And then by 1969, all of us who were in Liberia that were going to enter into Israel from there had made it. And shortly thereafter, We established the community by Yom Kippur, 1970. We were established as a community there, and we, as I said before, had faced quite a bit of opposition. It's not been an easy journey, but through a consistent application of a formula, we've been able to maintain ourselves there in that land, and now we're celebrating a 50-year milestone wherein the community has been officially established since Yom Kippur, 1970. Here we are approaching Yom Kippur 2020, and that marks 50 years for the community. We've been able to maintain there. We've been able to improve in terms of our relations with those who are indigenous to the land, not only the Israeli Jews that have come there from Eastern Europe and those parts and from America, but we've also established strong ties with our indigenous brothers and sisters there in the land. And that's something that most of our people don't hear about. They are indigenous African Edenic brothers and sisters who have been there for generations that we've established relationships. Our Bedouin brothers, our Ishmaelite brothers there, the Ethiopian brothers and Sudanese that have come into the land. And we have strong ties and relationships with all of those individuals. We become sort of like a unifying force for the nations that are represented there. But it's all been through a journey. It's all been through the application of a formula. And I just want to say that this is what I'm alluding to in terms of us as African people. You're right. Most of the time when we begin talking about the Bible, the first thing that people's minds do is switch to, okay, you're referring to religion. You're going to try to share with me tenets of your religion, beliefs and ideals from your religion. Though the Bible has been used primarily as a religious book, that's the trick that they played on us as a people. We have to realize that the Bible was a real historical document that's been recognized internationally as a historical document. If we go back to 1948, when the State of Israel was actually established, they used the Bible as a historical document to actually base the whole returning of the children of Israel at that time, the Zionists, back to Israel. They used the Bible as a historical document.
But see, I think the problem with that, though, is Brother Benor, is that even that's the case, but the people who used it aren't the people who are actually...
Right.
See?
Yeah. Yes. You're exactly right. You're exactly right on that. And, you know, that's been an issue of controversy and contention as well. I mean, we initially had that same position, and we stood on that position as well. But we realized that, you know, we, the nation of Israel, was a nation. We were like a speckled bird. We were comprised of, you know, people of all different colors in terms of the nation of Israel. And but we do know that when we trace our history as African Americans back, the way that we came into America through slavery, we were able to actually conduct an effective research to trace our migration and to trace how we were brought in slavery over here from West Africa all the way back to Northeast Africa. And we have compelling evidence now through firsthand accounts from the ethnic groups there on the ground, who also their you know, their historical positions and testimonies actually correlate with what we're saying. And then now there's DNA evidence that proves that those of us who here in America of African-American descent, that around 60% of us have the DNA that connects us back to Northeast Africa from the tribes of Jacob. And that we also still share that same DNA with many of the people there in West Africa and South Africa and Northeast Africa.
Right.
So there's a lot of evidence that supports what we're talking about and corroborates what we're saying in terms of the Bible being more of a history book. And the book also contains prophecy that foretold not only chronicles our history, but foretold of events to come that have unfolded throughout history to testify, to show us and testify that there was a higher force that was working with us as a people.
What does it say about those who dominate and control Judaism today, who control a lot, control media, control diamonds? What does it say about these people who are trying to eliminate, exterminate another people, and who dictate and dominate affairs in the world? What does it say about these people?
It says if they're doing that you will know a tree by the fruit it bears.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about in terms of prophecy, the Creator regathering his people and restoring his people. So if you find that there's a people in this day and time that are operating contrary to that, you will know those people by their actions. You understand that they're not fitting the description of the people of the Bible and what they are to be doing in this day and time. The people of the Bible are to be regathering the tribes of Israel, restoring the worship of the true Creator of heaven and earth, because that is actually the formula that has allowed us to be successful where others have not been. You know, one thing I want to share with you about history, you know, our anointed spiritual leader, Ben Ami, is not often recognized as a historical figure of African-American descent. But I want to share this with you and your listeners. You know, in 1967, he led the largest mass resettlement of Africans in the diaspora back to the continent in history. He led about 350 souls out of America, Chicago, mostly, parts of America, right, back to Liberia in 1967. And that was the largest mass resettlement of African Americans in history. And how many of our people even know about that?
Right. You're right.
Yeah. And so, and now, and there's been others that have researched the history and put it in a historical context in terms of other Hebrew, Israelite, and Black Judaism movements that were taking place from the time we stepped foot here in America. There were those who were identifying themselves as the people from Canaan land, singing the Negro spirituals, and then coming out of slavery and begin to establish different communities where they were teaching our people that we were the descendants of the people who came from the Holy Land. You know, there are those that have put us into the perspective of all the different Hebrew Israelite groups. You do have some that do conduct themselves more in a religious manner. You have some that conduct themselves more in a different way. But we are organized community within the whole Hebrew Israelite landscape. And we're the only group that has actually repatriated back to the Holy Land to establish ourselves as a government there, as a governing body that governs ourselves, because we are kibbutz. And the kibbutz allows you within the state of Israel to establish your own law that you will govern your community by, your community. We're a government. But prophetically, we're a government as it states that, you know, our Creator would establish a kingdom in the book of Daniel 2:44 in the last day that would not be left to other people, but it would be established. And so we are that kingdom as well. And I just want to, you know, put that out there, because historically, you know, we have made our mark in history. We're continuing to make our mark in history because we reached the 50-year mark, which is considered a jubilee. And this jubilee, as you mentioned earlier, is coming and coinciding with the year of return, and it's coinciding with also the American president who was just in 2018, January 8, 2018, signed the Human Rights Bill H.R. 1242, recognizing that, you know, for 400 years, African Americans, now we know that we've been here contributing and we've been on this continent much longer, but at least America's recognizing from 1619, the first of us arrived as indentured slaves at Jamestown, Virginia, and 2019 marked the 400-year mark, and so he passed that bill so that they could begin to recognize that we've been here contributing for 400 years officially from their record. But that coincides and that set off, you know, and this is why I say there's a greater and higher power that's at work. We know that in the book of Genesis, in the 15th chapter, and we're talking about history and destiny here.
Okay, well, listen, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do, Dr. Okay. Ben-Or. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, with more information about what we're discussing, and you too can join the conversation. You can dial 215-490-9832. A number of people are on hold. If you want to make a comment or have a question or concern, You can just hang up, call right back, then I know that you want to discuss something. So please do that. But once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This program, African Perspectives, on Monday at 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 p.m. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Friday. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., once again, it's Revive with Sister POC. And then at Sunday night at 7 p.m. on Sunday, Time for an Awakening. Every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warm Valentine Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking with our good brother, Dr. Atur Ben,
Orr.
Oh yeah, I got you, Dr. Ben Orr. I'm trying to find another piece of this. So of the information you sent me, a lot of good stuff, man. You really did, and I really appreciate it. We're talking to Dr. Ben Orr, and we'll finish the conversation that we had before the break, as we were talking about, like, one of the things that you mentioned. It's always, see, I'm looking at, and I know the area of Damone, Israel, is small compared to the land mass of what Israel is. I mean, even though it's not a huge land mass, we all know that, you know.
Right.
But in terms of what they have done, in terms of what the European Jews have done to secure that and to weaponize themselves to the extent, you know, that they are a formidable army. Because of course they have, because they have the United States, and
That's right, and
because they have the United States and Western society, they have Europe, everything backing them. So they're the bully in that area, and they can dig. Like I looked at, you know, there was a commercial here in the States for Tel Aviv, for you to come to go to Tel Aviv and vacation and so forth. Of course, which Tel Aviv used to be the capital, and of course Trump moved the capital, or had approved to move the capital, which the European Jews have been trying to do for a long time, probably since they took it, to make Jerusalem their capital, which of course was very tenuous because of the other faiths that are there, you know? But yet that was done, you know? And what did the community there in Damone feel about what was happening?
Well, we were definitely looking closely at the developments as they unfolded with regard to that from a prophetic standpoint, one. And number two, this, you know, from the standpoint of how it was impacting the relations between all of the different groups there. Again, as I was sharing with you, we've been working actively to try to unify the groups and bring about some meaningful, peaceful relations between the different groups there. We even have established an organization called MEDAC, Middle Eastern African Diaspora Unity Coalition, which we have representatives from all of the different groups there. And we're also organized and participating at the AU level as part of the sixth region from the Middle East. What they call the Middle East, but we call Northeast Africa.
Okay.
So we've been working to try to unify some of these groups, and certainly we were concerned as that action was taken, how it was impacting with our groups, and so we were involved in some of the negotiations to try to see how to best bring about a more peaceful cohabitation between us in that land. And see, you got to go back historically. Certainly, we know that things are unfolding, and that there's a, you know, we see people making decisions, taking decisions, and doing certain things and they have their own reasons for doing them. But we also know that the Creator puts it in the hearts of men and women to do His will as well. It, despite the way how they perceive their actions, a lot of times their actions are being controlled by higher power, and they don't really understand the impact of what is being done in terms of the overall scheme of things. So we look and try to put things in the prophetic context, because you know, for example, let's take Israel for example. In 1948, it was established, as you say, by the Zionists that came in from Europe, and prior to that, it was called Palestine. And those of us who were here in America who were still searching for our identity had no real reference to a geopolitical place or geographical land called Israel prior to the establishing of the State of Israel, because they had changed the name to Palestine years before. So we never knew geographically before 1948 where Israel even was. And so if we were going to reconnect and that become a part of us as a people, some of our identity, we would have had no way to even connect to a land and a culture and a way of life if that hadn't taken place. So that having happened, even though those individuals may have established it for one reason, it allowed us to be able to turn our eyes as those who have been scattered into the diaspora and who know who we are as a people. It began to give us a geographical location that we could begin to turn to and know that this is an established place that is referred to by the name prophetically that we knew we would be returning to Israel. Now we don't look at those boundaries that are drawn there today as the ancient boundaries. The ancient boundaries are much broader and wider than what's there today. As we mentioned, it's a very small landmass now when we go by those boundaries that have been drawn up by the European powers. But we know that still is that is a part of the land that we knew as Israel in ancient times.
Well, that's because of some of the artwork, some of the structural things that are there and that have been there for thousands of years, you know.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, so that's also verifiable in some of the research I've done. I've talked with different members of the Ghana ethnic group there in Ghana, West Africa. I had spoken with many members from the Gad tribe who told me that they traced their history back to ancient Israel. And I wanted to verify that in an official manner. I went and spoke with the leader of the Gad tribe, the Wulamo, of the spiritual leader of the Gad tribe there in Accra. And on two occasions, we've had official meetings with them where they shared their information historically of coming from an area near the Nile River, and they were calling that Israel. And whereas if you look on the map, they call that Egypt today, but they were referring to it as Israel on both occasions. So that tells you that in ancient times that the land that we know as Israel today was much broader than it is today. Then it was much broader than it is today.
Well, also too, the landmass that was known as Kemet, what the Greeks called Egypt, was wider than it is today as well, you know.
Exactly.
And the documentation of that existence is, you know, it's not disputed, you know.
It's not disputed. Exactly right.
You know, where there are some things religiously and even biblically, there can be some dispute, you know. But I think
because
of what brothers and sisters did in the Nile Valley, in the development of Kush Punt and all these other civilizations that formulated to be Kemet, which is, as far as I'm concerned and other scholars and historians are concerned, is the height, the apex, the pinnacle of African high culture. And it reigned for thousands of years. You know, it wasn't a flash in the pan. It reigned thousands of years. You know, and so the documentation is there. Problem that I have is who dominates and controls Judaism today, and how they do that. and what effect does it have on brothers and sisters who are Hebrew, who can really, as you said, trace? Because a European Jew cannot do that.
Right.
You know, in fact, what he has done is really unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, what he has done is unlawful. He has taken another people's land. You know, now, I know in the airlift in Ethiopia, because of starvation and so forth, the Ethiopian Jews, I can't remember what it was, Project Moses or something to that effect. I can't remember the title of it. But basically, they went to and airlifted a number of Ethiopians, Jews, out of the situation that they were in terms of starvation and so forth, and brought them into Israel. And then I think another thing happened there as well. But once again, you know, that's great. But if you're going to treat them like second-class citizens, if you're going to disrespect them, I remember seeing where an Ethiopian police officer was being beaten by Israeli police officers, you know, almost beaten to death. And I'm quite sure that happens many times. What is the living conditions? Are they segregated in Israel, or are they really part of the overall living situation in Israel? Do they have the latitude and the ability to move about freely? Can they go where they want to go, live where they want to live? Is there equality in terms of jobs and positions? Are they paid the same? What are those kinds of things? Because I'm saying that to say, Brother Ben-Or, Dr. Ben-Or, because, you know, I have such deep disdain for Europeans and what Europeans have done. And one of the group of Europeans is European Jews, because how they have manipulated and undermined and controlled, particularly Christianity, where a lot of the European, a lot of the Caucasians don't want to come to that fact. They don't want to believe in that fact. You know, they believe that Christianity is numero uno. Well, of course they are, because they are proselytizing. They're proselytizing religion. They seek converts, just like Islam. They seek converts. Judaism doesn't seek converts.
Right.
You know, they seek control and land, you know. So how is it? What is the atmosphere like?
Well, it's a good question, and I'll elaborate on that by saying that it's much like it is here in America and other places where you have diverse communities living in a land, and you have a predominant ethnic group that's controlling things, or, you know, race of people who are controlling things in terms of politically. And economically, you know, you do find in most places these things you're talking about, where there will be, you know, discrimination. Mm-hmm. There'll be some, you know, some segregation that will be taking place as well. And that is happening in, to some degree, in Israel. But by and large, you know, those ethnic groups, especially the Ethiopians that have been brought over there over the years, you see them now having... began to matriculate throughout all different sectors of the society. You know, when you travel to Israel, you see our Ethiopian brothers and sisters everywhere you go, and I mean, they seem to be getting along fine. I mean, I know that things are not perfect. I know several of them are involved in you know, advocacy movement, and we've actually joined in and collaborated in some of those movements as well, when their interests have aligned with ours, and as well as you've got several of them that are now participating in government level positions. We had several representatives who are moving into the political arena from the Ethiopian community now. So the Ethiopians are moving along fairly well there.
Okay, but now what about the brothers and sisters in Dimona? Are you a part of the Israeli government? You're part of the Israeli system, or do you have your own autonomy?
It's comprised of both elements. We have our own autonomy, as I mentioned before. We're kibbutz, recognized as a distinct community there. They understand the laws that we govern and guideline ourselves by. We have members of our community, as most of your listeners may know, that have participated into the military. And even in the military, they recognize that we have certain guidelines and standards that members of our community have to govern ourselves by, and they honor those to some degree as well, even with our children being in the military, mm-hmm. you know, participating in the national service through the military. And also, we do have a few of our community members who have decided to involve themselves in politics. Most of our anointed spiritual leaders and the leaders of our community, most of them are not politicians. And we don't really engage much in politics, even though because of the influence of our community, they're in Israel. There are people that come and journey to Israel to visit specifically our community. And then the influence we're beginning to have there in the country, we're recognized by many of the politicians in Israel, and we are, you know, we're engaged quite often by those running in the political parties to see how they may be able to gain our support. But again, our position is not political in terms of us supporting any one particular party. We do have a few members that are running for political positions, but again, some of these things are strategic in terms of us being able to influence policies and stuff like that in our interest. But in terms of integrating into the society to lose our identity as African Hebrew Israelites, that is something that we're not doing. We're not joining. We're not practicing Judaism. We're maintaining our own autonomy in terms of our identity and what we practice and what we govern ourselves by.
But that's interesting because, you know, the book, do you follow the Torah, but not as I'm sorry.
Absolutely, we do. We mm-hmm. do follow the Torah. However, we do interpret the Torah and we carry the essence and the original intent of the law into our present day reality. Mm-hmm. And our application of the Torah is a modern day application of it. We don't apply the Torah as it was applied during the days of Moses. Okay. We apply it as it should be applied during our day and time.
Do you also deal with the Talmud?
We don't really use the Talmud as one of the documents that okay. we.
Yeah, I know the Talmud had some very bad stuff about us. Really bad stuff.
We don't deal with the Talmud, the Kabbalah. We don't deal with those books.
Because, I'm sorry, brother. I just can't believe in a religion that says I'm cursed, you know. That my skin, that my nose, I'm cursed. Because of my hair, I'm cursed. You know, I'm sorry. I just can't gravitate to a religion that wants to make me believe that I'm cursed. We have some callers on the line, Dr. Ben Orr. Let's get to some callers.
Okay.
447. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Maybe they just want to listen, so we can. That's free to do that. 404-593. Good afternoon. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes, Brother Oshi.
Hey, Brother Gabriel. How you doing, Baba Gabriel?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Okay. Let me find my question in here.
Okay.
Torah Beno, shalom. How are you?
Oh, shalom, my brother.
Shalom,
how
brother.
You doing?
I'm great. Everything is great. I wanted to talk a little bit about the African situation. My experience from living in Africa for many years myself is that, or in Ghana for many years, is that when you can tap into the psychic energy field of the pure black African people every day, and at the same time, rarely run into white people, I found that it's a strengthening of the African American mind. I have personally been uplifted by just being in the midst of Africans all the time, and observing how they handle their business, their cultural practices. It has strengthened me tremendously. I wanted you to comment on, you haven't lived in Ghana many years. Can you also talk a bit about how that has affected you being amongst Africans every day like that?
Yes. Thank you, Brother Gabriel. That's a very powerful point that you're bringing out. And for me, likewise, it's been very empowering feeling to come from America, where you know we've been oppressed, and our people are just now coming out of the beginning to work their way up to be able to own businesses and to run businesses and to be in control in terms of you know, certain political and socioeconomic factors that govern us as a people. But when you go back home to the motherland, you see it to such a greater scale, where we are governing ourselves. And it's not without the influence of, you know, European influences, of the nations of Europe being influenced there. But on a day-to-day basis, we see our own people governing our governments, running our businesses, managing our affairs, and that's something you just don't see every day here in America. Even in the cities where we dominate, like Washington D.C., Atlanta, where predominantly we're in those cities. We're not always at the forefront of governing and running things. And to be over there and actually now hear some of the things that I hear the AU. Beginning to work towards doing to unify us and to make things where over the years we've been divided in terms of our ability to trade across borders and that type of thing on the continent, having to have visas and passports to cross the borders of those different countries. Now you see the AU moving towards realizing that that's been hindering us in terms of our development on the continent. So they're working towards dissolving those boundaries that have been erected to put us at a disadvantage by the European nations. And so now we're looking at later on this year, the African, the Continental Free Trade Agreement coming into effect, that's being signed off on by the members of the AU, which will allow the African nations to begin to trade across borders. And, you know, now they're working towards a, you know, passport that it will be a continental passport. I know now they actually have them, the passports that we have in Ghana, those of us who have been blessed to get the Ghanaian citizenship recently, those passports that we've gotten, those are ECOWAS passports that allow us to traverse across the borders of 16 different nations without having to get visas there in West Africa. So a lot is happening. You can see that they're projecting that what they're going to do with the Continental Free Trade Agreement is going to increase our ability to produce revenues and business into the trillion over the course of the next several years as a result, as that begins to take place. So it's a lot. And that's not even to speak about where we're going prophetically and spiritually as this awakening continues to take place amongst our people.
That's encouraging for me because I, as a Pan-Africanist, and as I said, it, you know, Pan-Africanism repairs. We have to develop. Africa has a one currency, one central government, one situation where all of us can be able, as opposed to be undermined and manipulated by this government or that government. In fact, I just recently read where some of the countries like Cote d'Ivoire and so forth will no longer use France's currency.
Yes, right, exactly.
You know, so that to me is very positive. Brother Gabriel, you got another question?
No, that's pretty much what I wanted to point out today.
Okay.
I'm enjoying the talk. And,
all right.
It's great to have our brother here from Ghana to share the understanding of how things are on the continent, because that's what we're missing over here to
that's
a great
right.
extent.
And I agree. I agree. We're going to take another call. 602-602. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm just listening, brother.
Okay, Brother Marcus, continue to do so. Thank you. Thank you. 404-404-696. Good afternoon. 404-696. Another one who just wants to listen. So we got a bunch of folks who just want to listen, and that's good. So out there, they're listening and they're calling in, they're online. And so once again, my guest today is Dr. Ben Orr. And we're talking about the history of African people and what has happened, what's happening, our future. And, I know that for some of us who believe, not in a theology, not in a religion, but just believe that African people must do these things for themselves, regardless of the religions they have. And I'm hoping, and that's my prayer to Almighty God, that comes about, because that's what we need. We need that kind of strengthening, that kind of awakening, because we have to admit the forces that are in this world, the European forces that are in this world are evil. They are evil.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
That's the element. That's
You know, I'm not just looking at our history, because that's substantiated, but I'm talking about even to this day and the minds that they have today. To me, I know you are from here, right? You're from the U.S., right?
Yeah, I was born here in the U.S.
Yeah. And so it should be no way in hell or any other place that Donald Trump could be president of the United States with his behavior, his attitude, the things he said, things he's done prior to, and even deeper during the campaign, and then as president. I never call him president, I always just call him Trump. But even at that, he's alienating folks, he's sided with enemies. I mean, this cat is just ridiculous. And seeing that is the case, he has a great chance of being reelected.
That's
an indictment to me, as far as I'm concerned.
True.
That is an indictment on the people of this country and the mentality of the people of this country. It's crazy, man.
You know, brother, when he was elected first, for me, I just speak personally, for me, I always like to put things in a prophetic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was nominated as the party representative for the Republican Party, I already knew that this was a sign. This was a sign that things are really unfolding and that we should take note of in our generation, because, you know, looking back over the history of America and the kind of people that they've put into presidency, we go back starting with Bush, Bush Jr. You know, you could begin to see it then that there were certain individuals who were being put in that office who were not of the same, moral standard or character standard that they had in the past.
Well, I look at it I look at it like this. I think they were all corrupt, every one of them, even Barack. They were all corrupt. Mm-hmm. They all had no real true moral standing, but some at least gave an appearance. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Back in the day, at least they gave an
appearance. They at least used to give the appearance. That,
right.
You could see that there was an image that they were trying to, that you had to uphold.
Right.
That was indicative of someone in that position or office. But now you can truly see that there's no way that someone like a reality show, personality could come in and be president of the United States of America. And like you said, you've been able to see over the course of this time there's been so many things that people are in an uproar about, and it's been indicative prophetically of the fact that, you know, there was a time that they looked at us as a people where, you know, we were like a proverb and a byword. There was nothing that we could do right as a people, and everything mm-hmm. that we put our hand to, it fell apart. And I'm beginning to see that, you know, there's a degree of destabilization that is happening, even though there's quite a bit that's happening under this administration. I just learned that there's around 191 conservative representatives that have been elected to the judicial.
Exactly.
Under this administration.
Exactly. That's the most devastating. Exactly. Because they're going to be in those positions for decades. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is something we should definitely be conscious of and know in terms of the signs of our times, what is taking place, around us and the impact that's going to have on us as a people. But again, like I said, things are happening. We need to be able to put them in a proper perspective. And I know that while that is taking place, there are some great things that are taking place on our behalf as well. To coincide, to show us that there's an alternative for us if we're able to recognize the doors that are opening on our behalf, and we're able to direct ourselves towards those doors and enter through and reap the blessings and benefits that lie there.
Give me some examples of that, because, you know, what I see, because I'm not mm-hmm. religious, I'm spiritual. I do believe in God or entity higher than ourselves. I'm not, I don't believe in any particular religion, but I believe in the spirit of our ancestors. I believe in those who came before us, and we have an obligation to help us to return, not to the fact that what we did previously, you know, but to have the spirit and the heart and the mind of that historical reference to move forward. To be better, to do better, you know.
Yeah.
And so I understand that. But I don't see that happening too much today. And I haven't seen it really happen since my adulthood, because of the deep influence that Europeans have on the planet, you know.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are willing to do whatever they have to do to maintain the position of dominance and control, which they've established for themselves at the expense of everybody. They can give less than a rat's ass about anybody else on the planet. In fact, they're the only ones on the planet who have proven to annihilate a people, to really impose genocide. I know when you hear the word genocide, you think of European Jews, just like Holocaust. They have co-opted that word. The word Holocaust is the English word. The word that they have, the European Jews, is Shoah. But they have used Holocaust because, and every time you hear that, in fact, it was said that, of course, that's what we have experienced, which is a hell of a cost. But yet, they refuse for us to acknowledge our situation.
Right.
Because they have co-opted that word, and they have co-opted the word genocide. Genocide didn't happen to them. Genocide means you've been totally wiped out. The brothers and sisters in what is now called Tasmania, they've been totally wiped out. The brothers and sisters who were now were on the island of what the Europeans called Hispaniola, the Aqua, they have been totally wiped out, you know. So they're the only people on the planet that have initiated and actually practiced genocide on a group of people, you know. But yet the feeling for the European Jews, and, you know, and it happens here a lot because the United States, because of the control of Europeans, particularly European Jews, and, of course, the monarchy. I'm so damn sick of hearing about some damn royals. They ain't royal. That's such a dysfunctional ass family. But because right. of its connection, because this is, as they say in the UK, that this is still their colony. And they have colonies all around, the so-called Commonwealth. It ain't nothing common because they got all the damn wealth. You know? So, you know.
So true.
Yeah.
I hear you, brother. I hear you, brother.
So, you know, so we have a challenge as African people, regardless of whatever theology we have, and we all need to come to that table of brotherhood. Just like you mentioned some of the things that are opening up, the AU really needs to function as a true African union. And that true African union needs to talk about one Africa, regardless of where we are on that planet. Even North Africa, to tell those cats in North Africa, you want to be African? Well, you better stop this stuff. You better stop enslaving people. Stop neutering brothers.
Right.
If you want to be, if you don't, then your ass got to go to Syria, go to wherever. I don't give a damn where you go, but you're going to get the hell out of North Africa, whether you're in Morocco, Mauritania, because these places still have open enslavement of African people to this day. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, to me, and I'm just, you know, a lover of African people, regardless of who we are. I love us. I love Africa and I love African people, you know, wherever we are. And I recognize, as Dr. John Henry Clark said, we have no friends. We have no friends. Everywhere we go, everywhere on this damn planet, here the Chinese who have been disrespecting Africans in China. I read an article about a few months ago, you know, how they, you know, come in on their places and tear stuff up and push them around, put them in jail for a little while. Just you know, just. But yet, in Africa, they're treated with respect. In fact, China's going to make a serious move on Africa. They're talking about 100 million people moved from China into Africa. 100 million people. And you and I both know what China has done in Africa, particularly in Ghana. They have that mall that they're building, the China Mall, the expressway, the road from in Tamale, in the northern region. The road from Tamale to Moli Park, the game preserve, is paved by Chinese. But what else did they do? They built another resort higher up on a hill with, of course, a road leading to that. You can see it, you know, higher up on a hill. You know, so the Chinese in Africa, and then when you look at what Chinese have done to Africans, selling plastic meat and so, I mean, this is crazy. We, brother, let me just say this with all due respect. Mm-hmm. With all due respect, we need our best minds like you to come to that table to say, Africa, we're going to be one. Africans must unite. Yeah. You and I both know that the greatest threat to Europeans is African unity. That's why even Zygmunt Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, said that we must do everything possible to prevent Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora from connecting, from establishing unity, because they understand and they know that once that happens, it's over. And we don't have to shoot a damn gun, although we must understand, once we make that move, we have to protect ourselves. We have to defend it. So we definitely need, because we're dealing with a barbaric people. We're dealing with an evil damn entity. And I ain't talking about some Caucasian that's your friend, that you say is a good person, a good man, or a good... Damn, I'm talking about the systems. I'm talking about the institutions that Europeans have established that make it happen for them.
That's right.
You know, and probably the biggest institution, I know we don't want to say it, is the religion. Because if I'm able to feed you a religion, to give you a religion, it should be understood that if somebody treated me bad, why would they give me something good?
That's very true.
You know, if they treated me with such disrespect and dishonor, why would they give me something good? Because they didn't. They had you believing in a system that told you ain't getting nothing here on earth. So you, but you continue to pray to this and you believe this. And if you do that, then you'll get yours in the by and by.
Mm-hmm.
But while right. you're here on earth, you know, you have to be subjugated to my dictates.
Mm-hmm.
You have to beg me for a job, beg me to live here, beg me to live there. This school mm-hmm. can't go to this school, or that school. Deny me employment or deny me promotions.
See,
right. I'm a Baba. That's true. I'm an elder.
Baba.
Yes, sir.
That's you know, and I feel you. I truly feel what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. There have been so many institutions and systems that have been put in place that serve one people's interests against another people's interests. And when we talk about us as African people, they haven't served our interests unless we were serving the interests of those that were in power. Religion has been one of those institutions and structures that's been put in place. The Eurocentric education system has been put in place,
yes.
and it serves just like that. The mm-hmm. the economic system, it serves us disproportionately.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we look at the government systems and the cultures that have been established, none of these things have been done in without planning. None of these things have just been done by chance. They've all
right.
been well thought out, well planned out. And most of them have not been in the interest of African unity, as we're talking about right now.
Right.
And we've had great leaders that have risen up and that have come to prominence within our African American community throughout our history. Those of us in the Western Hemisphere have rose up over the course of this past, let's say, 400 years of our time being there in America. But there haven't been, even though there have been, you know, great and powerful movements, great and prominent individuals who have been able to unify us on that side behind certain movements and ideas, in terms of that unity, that reunification with Africa, that's been elusive for us in terms of how we've been able to effectively do that over the past years, 400 years. But We've had Garvey, we've had Du Bois, we've had X, we've had King, we have all these great and prominent leaders. But when it came to us reunifying back with Africa, there has not been anyone who's been able to successfully do that. And we have to look at that from a historical perspective in terms of our reunification and our restoration and upliftment as African people through our reunification. And that's why this generation that we're living in and what's happening there in Ghana, what's happening and beginning to take a hold across the continent in terms of the welcoming of us in the diaspora back home, this reunification is being realized now and it's being promoted. And there have been events that have taken place recently in the last few years that have caused this to begin to unfold right in our day and time. The thing that we're talking about is actually happening, but we got to know it's not just happening by chance. There's been a period of time where we were not able to successfully bring this into existence, but now it is happening. What has changed? What has taken place? What is now being done that has allowed us to be able to move into this era of history, where officially it's history is being made, where we are being welcomed back, and the whole idea of reunification is being embraced? What is actually behind this, and what is causing it to take place? This is something we have to begin to realize as a people. And certainly there's a conspiracy that's been put in place against us as a people, and why, and there's been something that has been, systems that have been put in place to keep us from actually knowing who we are and from actually reunifying. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. We talked about ancient Kemet and being one of the great civilizations of our antiquity. And we look at the great intellect and wisdom that went into just simply the building of the seventh wonder of the world, ancient wonder of the world, the Great Pyramid. You know, their best engineers and their best builders, their best scholars don't even know now how some of these things were done. And we know that there was a level of understanding and wisdom and intellect that we possess far beyond even them and their capability. And maybe that's what they don't want us to get back to. Maybe that's what they don't want us to get back to, a reconnection to our true identity and who we are and what it was that allowed us to be able to elevate and ascend into that level of consciousness and that level of godlike ability to do certain things on this planet. There's a conspiracy all out between not just one nation, but many nations to keep this information suppressed. So what is it now that we're tapping back into that's allowing us to be re-empowered and reunified? And that's where I'm sharing the testimony about what's taking place there in Israel. Of course, I don't mention this out of religious intent or try to convert anyone to any type of religious idea. I'm sharing with you a formula that we've been applying that has allowed us to reconnect to our identity, reconnect to where we went wrong in our past, to reconnect back so that we could then again take control of our destiny again by reconnecting with the mistakes that we made in our history that have caused the destiny that we had experienced over the past 400 years. We began to correct that, and that is why now we see certain things unfolding on our behalf. Things are unfolding on a global scale on our behalf, and now we're seeing this reunification process taking place. And I'll just share this so that I can give you an idea of what I'm talking about. When you reach the 50-year mark in terms of, from a biblical standpoint, a jubilee, as it's mentioned in the book of Leviticus, the 25th chapter, a jubilee represents a time where those who have been in bondage are to return back to their possession. Those that have been separated are to return back to their family. And it's a season to proclaim liberty and freedom. And this is all coinciding during the season wherein you hear these themes all across the globe. The 400 years, you shall return. You see this happening in terms of the year of return, the decade beyond the return, how now all these African nations are opening the doors of return. And then we have to see that this is not just coincidental, but this is by divine providence. And we're saying that there's a formula that we're applying now that's allowing us to be re-empowered.
Well, let's hope that formula is, you know, that is being done is shared amongst all of us so we all can tap into that so we can make this unification regardless of where we are.
Yes.
In the diaspora, on the continent, because it is the only place that we actually can do it and be safe, because it's the only place on the continent that we can claim without any interference, there ain't a damn court in the world that can dispute our claim. You know, it's just like, my contention is in Southern Africa and in Namibia and everywhere else that foreigners are, it's time for y'all to go. It's time for y'all to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have taken, just like they said in Nation of Islam, I charge the white man with being the greatest thief on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest criminal on earth. But, and that's a fact based upon the history. Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history. And that's what you have done. That's why I applaud you, Dr. Ben-Or. I really do. And I really appreciate this
Thank you, brother.
I really appreciate this conversation. Any closing words?
Likewise.
Any closing words?
Well, I just want to say that certainly this is a very, very blessed and unique generation that we're living in. And I know that we've been through a lot as a whole, as a people. And we're looking right now for the way forward. And we're looking towards the continent, and there's brothers like yourself and others who understand the important role that we as a unified African people need to play in terms of the course of history as it unfolds across this globe in the future ahead. We know that there are so many things that are happening. Nations are vying for control over our continent and our people, but there's also an awakening that's happening. I love the theme as you talked about this great awakening that's taking place amongst our people. And like you said, we want to share the formula that we're applying with our people. We're inviting individuals to come. I will be giving a presentation in Atlanta at the Return to Royalty Banquet Hall on March the 14th. And we want to share these type of things. And we want to share what it is that we're doing that's allowing us as a people that's actually, we feel, is fueling the unfoldment of developments that are happening prophetically. We want to share and so that we can chart these events that are happening and show how this is truly something that is not just happening by chance. This is our time, but we have to know what it is that we have to do in terms of continuing the process, because we were great, great, great people at once before, and we failed. Something happened. Something went wrong. And we had to realize what it was that went wrong, correct that, and then begin a long, arduous process of restoration and reunification, and that's where we're at today. It's taking place, and it's going to happen. And as this awakening continues to happen, there won't be anything that can stop it except us.
I say. Thank you, Dr. Ben Orr. That's brother, brothers and sisters, that has been Dr. Atura Ben Orr, who lives in Ghana. He is has dual citizenship. He's doing a lot of work here as well as there. We want to thank him. Brothers and sisters, we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, thank you for listening. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bivihorie means our victorious destiny. We shall be victorious. Bivihorie family, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Be back with us on Friday for more African perspectives. Peace.